Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 324. This is being recorded on September 9th of the year 2001. We're going to continue with a discussion that actually, in one sense, began many years ago when I began investigating circumstantial evidence suggesting that AIDS and later Ebola were developed or at least utilized as biological warfare weapons, and I believe that they were both developed and utilized as BW weapons. Also, we've been examining in a number of programs over the last couple of years indications that fascist elements and white supremacist elements might very well be exploiting or perhaps even manipulating the AIDS epidemic in South Africa for their own purposes. And specifically, we took a look in For the Record program number 317 at the mysterious death of Dr. Larry Ford, who at various times had worked for elements of U.S. military intelligence, elements of CIA, and also the South African apartheid regime, and specifically worked with Dr. Wouter Bassin, a colonel in the South African military, on something called Project Coast, which was using biological warfare weapons, and including genetically modified microorganisms as weapons of war and political assassination, this in the apartheid era. We looked at Larry Ford initially in For the Record program number 225. We later touched on that story in number 228. And again, For the Record program number 317 was devoted to an examination of a very important article about Dr. Larry Ford. That article appeared in Los Angeles Magazine's issue of July of 2001. The article is called The Medicine Man. It was authored by Edward Humes. And in that article, it discussed Larry Ford's work on behalf of elements of CIA, his work on behalf of elements of military intelligence, his work with Wouter Bassin on Project Coast, and a couple of the projects that Larry Ford had been involved in, when, in addition to modifying biological warfare weapons to produce, quote, Kaffir-killing germs, unquote, or germs that would kill Africans only. Kaffir is a derogatory Afrikaans term for black folks. The projects that Larry Ford were involved in included researching Ebola and Marburg viruses in Africa, and also looking at ways to see to it that the South African military, or whites serving in the South African military, did not become infected with AIDS. In a book called The Plague Wars, which we accessed for a period of time inside one of this broadcast, that book co-authored by Tom Mangold and Jeff Greenberg, and copyrighted in 1999 by the St. Martin's Press in hardcover, we took a look at allegations by a fellow who was agreed to be interviewed under the name of Gert. Gert had been a colonel in the South African military and also claimed to have worked with Larry Ford on, or with Wouter Bassin, rather, and also by extension Larry Ford, on Project Coast. And specifically, Gert said that both AIDS and Ebola had been deliberately spread in southern Africa by the apartheid regime military as part of their covert wars in the 1980s. And he also mentioned that one of the priority items was seeing to it that the spread of some of these organisms to the South African military who were not targeted could be controlled. And it also was maintained that in the article The Medicine Man by Edward Humes that the Bruderbond, described as a secret white supremacist organization, had written in some of its internal documents about the possibility of utilizing AIDS in order to make whites a majority in South Africa. As we looked at in Miscellaneous Archive Show M8 and in For the Record Program 225, the Bruderbond was the core group of the National Party, the dominant political element of the apartheid era. It was both allied with and specifically patterned after the Nazi Party in Germany. And again, For the Record Program 225 and Miscellaneous Archive Show M8 go into that. One of the alarming things about not only Project Coast, one of the most alarming things about Project Coast and about Larry Ford's series of associations is that not only does it appear that the elements involved in the alleged dissemination of AIDS and Ebola as biological warfare weapons and the elements that were overtly white supremacist and fascist in their outlook, it would appear that these elements did not disappear with the end of the apartheid regime, but rather relocated located, went underground, and that they continue to network in a very frightening way. I would also note that in many discussions of the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk, that book published by the National Vanguard Books, the publishing arm of the National Alliance that also puts out the Turner Diaries, the model for Timothy McVeigh and company, as well as the Nazi terror group The Order in the 1980s. In the book Serpent's Walk, the Third Reich goes underground, builds up its economic muscle, buys into and gains control of the American opinion-forming media, and then, following a biological warfare attack with genetically engineered microorganisms of ostensibly Russian origin, which wipes out much of the Earth's population and the President and Vice President of the United States, martial law is declared in the U.S. by the Speaker of the House, who becomes President, and the underground Reich is invited into a governing coalition in the United States. I would note in this regard that, as we looked at in For the Record Program 317, and as we're going to be reviewing in this broadcast, not only was Larry Ford apparently in contact with certain white supremacist and fascist elements, but it would also appear that Ford was part of a network involving Americans, an international network, that was dedicated to the restoration of white supremacy in South Africa. This organization is described as being composed of former heavy hitters in the apartheid regime who were very closely connected, very powerful, very influential, and who responded in an altogether deadly fashion to any significant opposition. That organization is alternately known as the Third Force, or Die Organisatie, in South African, or in Afrikaans, I should say. It is also going to be referred to here as the Spider Network. And I would note that the terms Third Force and Organization and Spider Network have all been variously applied to the Underground Reich and the Bormann Organization, about which I've spoken so many times, literally the economic and political component of a Third Reich gone underground. Turning once again to the Medicine Man by Edward Humes about Larry Ford, of Ford's connections to international racist organizations and the possibility that he had helped to equip terrorist groups with some of his toys, the article comments as follows. This is a review from a passage that we looked at in the first half of the broadcast. Speaking of Dr. Larry Ford, and the investigators who were looking into Ford, in the process, they unearthed a trail that stretched all the way from the CIA to apartheid-era South Africa, and Dr. Wouter Bassin, the man who ran the country's clandestine bioweapons program. The question still plaguing federal, state, and local investigators is a simple but urgent one. What was Ford planning to do with his germs and bioweapons expertise? The discovery of militia movement and racist literature among Ford's papers has raised the possibility that he offered biological or chemical weapons to terrorist groups. And still later, commenting on a U.S. Air Force report about the South African bioweapons program, this is a U.S. Air Force Academy report. The Air Force report quotes testimony from a Swiss intelligence agent who laundered money for Bassin and who describes a worldwide conspiracy involving unnamed Americans. Quote, "The death of Dr. Ford, and revelations of his South African involvement," the report states, "raises the possibility of a right-wing international network still united by a vision of South Africa once again ruled by whites." Skipping down again. Speaking of Gideon Bauer, the South African trade attaché in Southern California, who had helped to obtain some of the toys that Larry Ford made, including genetically engineered bioweapons. Speaking of Bauer here, two former FBI informants who'd infiltrated the South African procurement program, named Byron and Fitzpatrick, are commenting about Bauer. They say he raved about the ability to keep whites in power through biological warfare, and he hinted at being part of a separate agenda, some sort of extra-governmental conspiracy like the one described in the Air Force report that had plans to unleash biological agents worldwide on South Africa's enemies if the need should ever arise. "Just be ready," Fitzpatrick remembers Bauer warning him cryptically, then asking, "How fast could you get your daughter out of the country if you had to?" Unquote. "I have to be honest," Fitzpatrick says, "Gideon could be a great guy, but there was something dangerous about him. And when he started talking about the master plan, about what a great service Ford had done for his country, and about getting out of the country, It gave me the chills. Well, it as well it should, and noting the international networking among fascist and white supremacist elements, and noting the Nazi and Third Reich heritage and assignations of our alliances, I should say, of the Bruderbond, and noting in that article the medicine man with a Bruderbond was contemplating AIDS as a means of returning whites to the majority in South Africa, or creating a white majority in South Africa, the possibility of a number of things. First of all, of a deliberate conspiratorial aspect to the AIDS epidemic that is devastating South Africa. That's one of the things to consider. It'll be interesting to keep an eye on future Ebola outbreaks in Africa in light of some of the disclosures of Project Coast, the ties to elements of our own intelligence system, and the alleged use by Project Coast not only of genetically engineered weapons, but specifically of AIDS and Ebola. One of the things that we're going to look at in the rest of the broadcast are indications from a number of expert observers that the white supremacist elements in South Africa, perhaps sort of a Bruderbond in exile, did not disappear at the end of the apartheid regime, but rather they went underground, they went abroad as expatriates, and in a fashion not at all unlike, and perhaps as an extension of, the Third Reich's going underground. Basically, we have an underground apartheid Reich, so to speak, described variously as deorganisatie, and I may be mispronouncing it, it's an Afrikaans term, the third force, and also the spider network. All of those terms, the organization, third force, and die Spinne, have also been applied to the underground Reich in exile as well. The two may very well be connected, although not coterminous. Turning now once again to the book The Plague Wars by Tom Mangold and Jeff Goldberg, again copyright and hardcover, 1999 by St. Martin's Press, ISBN number 0-312-20353-5. We're going to examine the organization, the Third Force, the Spider Network, the Organisatie. We're going to examine indications that, in fact, just such an organization is very real, that it is feared by those who know about it. It may very well be that the organization referred to in the Air Force report and with which Larry Ford was working is this very same Organisatie. We're also going to take a look at indications that Dr. Wouter Bassin continued to be affiliated with the Organisatie, and that they, the Organisatie or organization may be involved in drug smuggling as a way of furthering its activities. Turning now to The Plague Wars by Mangold and Goldberg, we read, speaking of the whites who were opposed to the ANC and the end of apartheid, the most determined of these whites came to be known as the Third Force, unquote. They comprised not the mad neo-Nazi right, but revanchist politicians and hard men in the military and the military intelligence and civilian intelligence agencies and the myriad covert action groups involved in fighting clean or dirty, internally or externally, to maintain white supremacy. And next, for more commentary about the Organisatie, we're going to review, we're going to examine more of the interview with Nico Palm, who is a South African Defense Force engineer and who was one of the informants who provided considerable information to Mangold and Goldberg. And he had direct experience with Project Coast and some of the covert operations of the apartheid era. Of the Organisatie, Palm speaks, by the way, it's spelled capital D-I-E, capital O-R-G-A-N-I-S-A-S-I-E. Nico Palm is quoted speaking about the Organisatie in The Plague Wars. Palm spoke enigmatically of the Organisatie, a pulp fiction nom de guerre, which he calls even more melodramatically the Spider Network. It's a group of white South Africans who wait patiently for the demise of the ANC government and a return to the old days. They are not the mad pseudo-Nazis of the far right, but something far more organized, well-financed, and patient. Other people know them as the Third Force. We are to hear of them from time to time. We are to hear of them time and again from ex-soldiers like Nico Palm, all the way up to South Africa's Deputy Defense Minister, Ronnie Kasriel, that's K-A-S-R-I-L-S. Significantly, files have also been opened by MI5 in London, where Die Organisatie is recognized as a small, potent, and potentially significant union of like-minded South African right-wingers. All of them are expatriates now living in the United Kingdom, who may support the destabilization of any black South African government. and Gert, who provided information alleging that both AIDS and Ebola had been applied as biological warfare weapons by the apartheid regime. Gert, too, is aware of Die Organisation. He is described here by the authors. It is within this context that Gert now raises the question of Die Organisation. He is clearly apprehensive of its power, and it is the only moment he appears truly concerned. Quote, "These are people who take no prisoners," mutters Nico. Gert grimly nods his head. What we're going to look at next concerns Dr. Wouter Bassin's arrest for possession of 1,000 ecstasy tablets and indications that perhaps his alleged drug smuggling activities and certainly his other activities, including perhaps a perpetuation of the biological warfare research program, this program may very well have been perpetuated, or at least its capabilities perpetuated by the Third Force. The Yacomet referred to here is Jürgen Yacomet, J-A-C-O-M-E-T, a now deceased Swiss intelligence operative who worked with Wouter Bassin. He also appears to have worked with Larry Ford. He worked with Project Coast, and he is convinced that Bassin's drug activities could only have been an extension of Bassin's activities on behalf of the Third Force. And as we're going to see here, it would appear that the capabilities of Project Coast have fallen into the hands of this Third Force. After discussing the arrest of Wouter Bassin on January 29, 1997, for possession of 1,000 ecstasy tablets, the authors ruminate, "So what was Bassin up to that night?" He says simply that he was framed. Another version has it that he did it purely for personal gain. There is a third explanation, that it was a mixture of personal gain and helping to raise funds for the Third Force, of which Bassin is considered to be a member. Bassin's possible connections with the Third Force were elliptically referred to by Jürgen Yacomet, the former Swiss military intelligence agent who worked with Bassin on money laundering aspects of Project Coast in Europe. When we met Yacomet, he was suffering from a serious facial and neck cancer. He had elected to go beyond conventional treatment and was in the hands of a private healer in the Philippines. Despite this serious illness, he remained a cheerful man, philosophical and optimistic, a good friend of Bassin's and of the old regime in South Africa. While in London on business in 1998, Yacomet was formally interviewed by officers of MI6 in room 114 of, appropriately, the Sherlock Holmes Hotel on London's Baker Street. They, too, wanted information about Bassin, the biological warfare program, and Yacomet's role in the whole affair. According to Yacomet, he told them virtually nothing. In fact, back in the mid-1980s, the Swiss agent had first worked with General Lothar Niethling, N-E-E-T-H-L-I-N-G, South Africa's police forensic chief, delivering arms to South Africa in an extensive sanctions-busting arrangement. And again, I may be mispronouncing that man's name. Perhaps it's Niethling. Niethling introduced Yacomet to Bassin, and the two men became friends. Bassin often visited Yacomet at his Bern home. Eventually, Yacomet traveled to South Africa on several occasions to help Bassin and Niethling in the dirty wars of the 1980s. Now, sitting in a quiet West London garden on an early spring day in 1998, Yacomet relaxes with coffee and cigarettes and discusses the arrest of Bassin and the ecstasy allegations. He scoffs at the prospect of his friend being a profiteering drug dealer. Quote, "It makes absolutely no sense if you know him. It makes no sense that he would mix with street dealers, and if it happened at all, there must be a higher interest," unquote. Such as, quote, "It might be to procure money to support a certain group which represents the interests of South Africa and wants the return of a white-dominated government," unquote. Yacomet, now nervous, is pressed to expand a little. "There is a group of people here in London," he says. "One could call them the Friends of South Africa. They have it in mind to see a strong, white South Africa again. There are American connections, too. They need funds, and it is possible that the drug business has helped them. You know, it would be really foolish for me to talk more about this. They are serious people," unquote. Yacomet searches for the popular expression and remarkably finds the same aphorism used by Gert about the same people. "They don't take prisoners. He says, finally, who are they? Jacobet mentions some well-known South African names, men previously associated with Third Force activities. He also refers to an American name known to Britain's MI5 for his alleged involvement with Bassin in money laundering, sanctions busting, and biological agents procurement. By the way, this might very well be the aforementioned Dr. Ford. Once again, the Organisatie is mentioned in respectful tones, and once again, the details remain scant and elusive. Jacomet remains silent, and he died months later of the cancer. It transpires that MI5 officials also take Die Organisatie very seriously. By the way, MI5 is British intelligence. Earlier you heard a reference to MI6. That's British foreign intelligence. Continuing. It transpires that MI5 officials also take Die Organisatie very seriously. They hold details of a small group of once powerful South Africans and or ex-Rhodesians who have residential rights in the United Kingdom, but who share a community of interest in the future of South Africa. The men comprise a closely knit group which would welcome and might be prepared to help the return of a traditional white government to the Republic. These men are not political fanatics, nor is their political motivation sufficiently visible to make them liable to closer supervision. Nevertheless, they remain a troubling point of political focus for Pretoria, where both the National Intelligence Agency and the Ministry of Defense also take them very seriously indeed. The relationship between Die Organisatie and Bassin is indistinct but troubling. Events after his arrest quickly confirmed that Bassin was not merely an alleged drug dealer. There was much more to it than that. And indeed, it would appear that the Third Force connections of Walter Wouter Bassin continue to this day. And I would note in that regard that Larry Ford, again, was described as being part of this international network of white supremacists looking to return the apartheid era, to return apartheid or pro-apartheid forces to power in South Africa. And chillingly, the account provided by Peter Fitzpatrick was that Gideon Bauer, the South African trade attaché with whom he had worked, had discussed the possibility of using some of the biological warfare weapons against some of the apartheid era, some of the apartheid regime's enemies, and in light of the connections between the apartheid regime and what I call the Underground Reich, and connections between the Underground Reich and elements within our own political and national security establishments, and within our own paramilitary establishment, so to speak, the possibility that elements associated with basically fascist or white supremacist elements in this country with connections to the national security establishment and with international connections to what I call the Underground Reich and perhaps the Organisatie, Third Force, Spider Network, whatever term one chooses to apply to the apparently formidable network known to people like Nico Palm and Gert and Jürgen Jacomet, the possibility of some of those elements using some of the toys developed by Larry Ford and others under the Project Coast program, and perhaps utilizing them against the United States or elements within this country along the lines of a serpent's walk scenario is not one that I would too readily dismiss. We're going to take a look now at some excerpts of an article from Foreign Affairs Magazine's issue of January and February of 2001. This article was authored by Laurie Garrett, and it's called The Nightmare of Bioterrorism, and it discusses some of the paramilitary right-wing and what Ms. Garrett describes as postmodern fascists' interest in utilizing biological warfare for their own purposes. In a section called Budding Bioterrorists, Laurie Garrett writes as follows. Although most people remain ignorant of the issues raised in that scenario, handfuls of internet-hooked extremists, right-wing militia members, psychologically imbalanced belligerents, and postmodern fascists are well-versed in the fine points of bioterrorism. Recipes for producing botulinum and anthrax are posted on the web. Books describing biological warfare assassination techniques are readily available. Some private militia groups train to use biological weapons. Indeed, law enforcement leaders claim that religious cults and militant political groups are the most likely to engage in biological terrorism. Skipping down. Perhaps it is the tone of some militants' rhetoric that sparks the most concern. In the Poisoner's Handbook, for example, Maxwell Hutchinson suggests that readers poison or kill Internal Revenue Service workers by filling out phony tax return forms and lacing them with a mixture of ricin, a poisonous protein, and dimethyl sulfoxide, or DMSO, a concoction Hutchinson claims is 100% lethal. The purpose of all this is to disrupt the operations of the IRS, Hutchinson writes, again quoting, "If done on a large scale, it would serve two purposes. It would make it more difficult for the IRS to operate efficiently, thus helping tax cheats and tax protesters. It might also awaken the politicians to the depths of the resentment felt by the taxpaying public," unquote. Fortunately, Hutchinson is a lousy chemist. Only simple chemicals, not proteins such as ricin, can dissolve in DMSO. But the depth of Hutchinson's antagonism is unmistakable. He suggests that readers kill Catholics by soaking their rosary beads in phytotoxin abrin, a toxin derived from a rare bean. He writes that botulinum is, quote, "fun and easy to make," unquote, and he urges survivalists around the world to hone their skills, readying themselves for biological warfare in the coming Armageddon. And again, one should note in that context what Larry Ford was found to be in possession of at the time of his arrest, turning once again to The Medicine Man by Dr. Edward Humes. Speaking of the people who were investigating Ford, and Detective Victor Ray, who headed the investigation, he steered the investigation to Ford's backyard, where men in Andromeda-strained suits would evacuate a neighborhood and haul away an arsenal of toxins, germs, plastic explosives, and guns. In the process, they unearthed a trail that stretched all the way from the CIA to apartheid-era South Africa and Dr. Wouter Bassin, the man who ran the country's clandestine bioweapons program. The question still plaguing federal, state, and local investigators is a simple but urgent one. What was Ford planning to do with his germs and bioweapons expertise? The discovery of militia movement and racist literature among Ford's papers has raised the possibility that he offered biological or chemical weapons to terrorist groups. And indeed, in light of some of the ruminations about the Air Force report that Ford was connected with an expatriate South African network that was the heir to Project Coast technology, and that was also contemplating, had at least contemplated the use of some of these weapons against the apartheid regime's enemies, that, I think, should prove frightening and illuminating to a sincere citizen, and the possibility that some of the elements that Ford was associated with would be connected to what I call the Underground Reich, and that in turn they could have connections to fascist and white supremacist elements in this country, including some with national security connections and perhaps with connections to the corridors of power, and that ultimately some of the same types of toys that Larry Ford was using in Africa could be used here. Well, that's not a possibility to be too readily dismissed. I've alluded to other broadcasts. Those are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. You can visit the Real Audio-equipped Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. Sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, has been compiling the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. There are other older For the Record programs available for download only, also on Real Audio. There are links to both web addresses for WFMU in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website, and in turn, there is a link on the WFMU website to Spitfires. That concludes Side B of For the Record program number 324. This is being recorded on September 9th of 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.